The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To hear the validation of all his family members and siblings really validate you at that dinner, what did that mean to you?
It was, well, first of all, it was,
her ego went blown.
No, boom. It was hilarious because they basically said to him what I had been saying and I didn't have to say it.
Well, I argue with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and we went back, but again, mad. It's amazing how God, I give God all the glory for that, man, because I think I was so, I don't know. I think my perspective was so single-like, you know what I mean? Like the single male.
Yeah.
To where my dad instantly saw, she talks about my character, he instantly saw character in her. So he would pull me aside and say, hey man, don't get caught up in all the looks, all that stuff is going to change anyway. That woman right there is a woman of character. That's who you need to be
God,
with.
That's...
And so I think for me at that time, I was looking at everything superficial, and if this doesn't work, then there's another one. Mm-hmm. And I don't think my mind was in tune on the most important thing that keeps the marriages working, and that's the character, bro.
Every second that escapes without you here with me keeps my heart anticipating till I finally see you.
When I made my vows, I told God that I was going to take care of this gift.
All my life I've been waiting for you. Girl, you know I've been praying for you. Been writing these love letters to you.
So I fight for that future in the present.
You know what I'm saying?
That was good.
Congratulations to the ones who found love, for the hope and new beginnings from heaven above. I await my future wifey. I pray that it won't be too long. Too long. Every second that is.
Welcome to the Dear Future Wifey podcast. I'm your host, Laterris R. Whitfield. Listen, are you still shacking up with us? If you're still shacking up with us, come on, can we get a commitment? Hit that subscription button and subscribe. Make sure you turn on your notification bell so you'll be notified about upcoming episodes. And while you're at it, make sure that you hit that like button on YouTube if you're watching us on YouTube. And if you're listening to us on Apple iTunes, then make sure that you do subscribe to the podcast. Man, we've been having an amazing season on the Dear Future Wifey podcast. Season 8 has been absolutely amazing. I've been reading all the comments, all the DMs. Thank y'all for signing up for the mailing list to join the Lit Fam. Well, today, listen, I've gotten some DMs about today's guest. Y'all been saying, why don't y'all get this powerful woman of God? Why don't y'all get her on the podcast? And I got a chance during the pre-interview to meet her amazing husband. And so a lot of y'all may be introduced to the first time to her dope husband. So cool. In our pre-interview, we start off, I said it's going to only be 15 minutes and end up being about an hour. But listen, y'all going to see why that pre-interview lasted so long once you meet this dynamic couple. So without further ado, welcome to Dear Future Wifey podcast, my homies, Tim and Nona Jones. How are y'all doing?
Hey.
Doing great.
Or should I call you Pastor? Pastor Jones.
He wants to be called Chief Apostle.
Oh, Chief Apostle. Chief Apostle Tim Jones. Yes. Amen. 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 And amen again. I know we got to say amen with a D. Amen.
If you don't have the D again. On it, the anointing.
Yeah, you ain't anointed. You ain't anointed.
No,
you got to say amen and amen again. So, Nona, what were we talking about? What made that interview last so long?
Man, I don't know. We just started to talk about life, and I think he was talking about how we met and his dad and the role his dad played. I don't know, we just talked about everything. It was good.
Tim, what do you remember from the interview? Slide the microphone close to your mouth as possible.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, we just got on there and started vibing about the realness of marriage.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
The reality.
And moving past the superficial and the things that everybody talks about on Instagram. Marriage is tough sometimes, man. And so I think we started talking about the good times, but also kind of the messiness that you have in marriage as well. And so it just kept going and going and going.
So let's talk about this. Well, I ain't gonna go there yet. I'm gonna talk about how y'all met. How did you meet old Nona over here? As she looks in your direction.
Yeah. You remember this was part of the...
I want the truth.
We'll let you tell your side.
Okay.
And then tell your side and Nona tell her side.
Yes.
So, I graduated college. We both went to the University of Florida. I graduated. I was working for a Fortune 50 insurance company. When I graduated, I got moved over to Panama City to work in the property casualty industry. And I didn't know anybody in the area. So as a young single male, I started going online trying to find someone that I could pray with.
Pray with. That's what you want to do.
Pray with.
P-R-E-Y.
P-R-E-Y. P-R-E-Y.
Here we go.
Pray on.
And so I went on to some applications to try to find people in the area. There was something called Black Planet.
Oh, yeah.
Some people may remember that with Black Planet. So I went on there, and no offense, but I used to just have this thing. Whenever I saw a pretty woman, I would just send them all the same message. Boop, boop,
copy and paste.
Boop. Yeah. I didn't know anybody. And so I saw Nona, and I was like, oh, my gosh, she is just absolutely fine and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so I was, I sent her the thing. And
as is every other woman, copying and pasting. Wow.
I sent it to her. And so I guess for the first many times, she just didn't recognize it or whatever. And so I wasn't paying any attention because I was just sending it. I couldn't even remember who I sent it to. And so she finally...
You're going out the quantity.
Listen! If she had teeth...
Come on, now.
And eyes.
Come on.
Hey, how you doing?
And some breasts. She had to have some breasts.
I sent it to her. She responded. She was like, hey, if you know me, you know, I'm not on here very often. Send it to my email. So I sent it to her email. Come to find out, you know, she was there at Florida. And I told her that I was back and forth to Gainesville all the time. My father had a church there in Gainesville. And so, I told her that I frequented there from time to time, you know, would it be okay if eventually we met? And so she's like, can you send me a picture? And so I sent her a picture and she wrote back, you are so fine. What can I do to get with you?
I'm gonna let him tell his story. Go ahead.
So, I'd send her the picture and we ended up, long story short, meeting in Gainesville. We met at her sorority sister's house. And, from there it's, you know, it's quite a bit of a story from there.
Oh, all right. So go ahead. So Nona, what happened?
So what had happened was, yes, I was on Black Planet because I had a lot of friends in high school who were on Black Planet and we would keep up with each other through that website. And so I remember there were like several mornings I would wake up and I would see this like bubble on my Black Planet screen. And it was just this random username, no picture, said, hi, how are you? Now, this was back in the day when like, you didn't really think it was like super sketchy and creepy, but it was kind of weird, right? Because we didn't really know about the craziness. But it happened maybe like 3 or 4 days in a row. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, is this one of my classmates? I just figured it was somebody that I knew. So I was like, hey, if I know you, here's my school email address and just email me because I'm not on here often. Or at least at night when he would send the message. I wasn't on there then. And so he emails me and he was just like, hi, you know, my name is Tim. I see that you live in Gainesville. I'm a graduate of the University of Florida, just like super benign, right? And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I responded back, really cool, great to meet you. And we just traded emails for about a month. I don't remember this whole thing about asking for a picture.
Oh, you asked for a picture. As a matter of fact,
I sent you the picture of me and the dog. Unsolicited. Now I remember. Now here's the thing. He didn't just send me a picture of himself. He sent me a picture of him with this miniature chihuahua, right? This little cute little dog. And so I'm looking at the picture and it was so endearing.
It worked.
Right?
It worked.
He used
it did
this
work.
Dog
it
like
did
a
work.
Prop.
It did work.
But see, now that I'm listening to this story, I'm wondering how many other women have this picture of him with this little chihuahua dog. And I'm sitting here thinking that I'm the only one. So we traded emails for about a month. And then he said that he was going to be coming to Gainesville to help with the dad's church. And he asked to take me out on a date. And I thought that was really sweet. But I didn't know if he was crazy, so I didn't want him to meet me at my dorm. I was staying on campus. I didn't want him to know where I lived. I had him pick me up at my lion sister's house, as he said. And yeah, that's how we met. Now, he says that there was like 20 women.
There was.
I don't remember.
I went
that.
Up in there. She had about,
I was in the room getting
10
ready.
Of her sorority sisters in there. I went to their house. And when I walked in, I'm like, man, none of y'all look like the picture that I saw. And they all sit down. They start asking me all these questions. You know, so if you lived in Gainesville, you know, tell me where this is. And they just started interrogating me. And I'm like, well,
to try to make sure you live.
Yeah. Where? I mean, like, I guess to make sure I was. Come to find out, she's back in the room, like monitoring me while I'm out there.
No.
While they're all, you know, questioning me and all this.
Like, there's this like one-way mirror.
Yeah, like so that I can
just like see what's happening. Yeah, like CIA interrogation.
Interrogation.
No. I was just getting dressed. That's it.
No, you came out after they finished and after they gave the.
I came out when I was dressed. Okay. And
so how'd your first date go?
It was great. It was great.
So what did you think at that time? Were you like, oh, this is a nice guy? Or were you be like, oh, I kind of see him as my boyfriend?
You know, I thought he was sweet. But see, so a little bit of context. About 6 months before this whole exchange, I found out that the man that I thought I was going to marry, he was my boyfriend at the time. I found out that he had cheated on me and got a girl pregnant. Mm. And so I was in a state of just incredible, like, emotional devastation for months.
Yeah.
So when I met him, like, I thought he was sweet and kind and everything, but there was still this question in the back of my mind, right? Because of what had just happened.
Of course.
I wasn't even thinking, oh, we're going to be together, we're going to get married. Like, I don't think I had enough hope in me to even imagine that.
What's up, Live Fam? Terrace R. Whitfield here. Can you believe we're approaching the 4-year anniversary of the Dear Future Wifey podcast? April the 15th marks the 4-year anniversary of all of us journeying to discover, uncover, and recover love. You know, one of the main things that I've gotten, the question that becomes a recurring question in my DMs is, how do you find the one? How do you vet the one? So I want to have a heart-to-heart conversation with you on YouTube Live, Monday, April the 15th. We're going to talk about some stuff. There's some things that I've learned talking to over 200 people about some misconceptions. We're going to debunk some misconceptions. We're going to learn how to vet the right one, how to overcome heartbreak, and how to circumvent heartbreak by spending too much time with the wrong people. Come on, somebody. Have you ever felt like you just spent too much time with the wrong people? We're going to find out what questions to ask to avoid that, how to discern the right one for us. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about some stuff. So join me. If you haven't signed up for the mailing list, make sure you do that right now. Click the link in the description. Sign up for the mailing list so you'll be notified about the YouTube Live on Monday, April the 15th, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I want you all to join me. We're going to have a conversation like we've never had before. And your life is going to change because of it.
That makes sense.
That's just how hurt I was.
Tim, what'd you think when you met, when you dated her, the first date?
That she wanted to get married the moment that she saw me.
No, he said, what did you think about me not projecting what you wanted me
anyway,
to?
Anyway, real talk. I thought she was beautiful. I thought she was even more beautiful than she was on the picture. I knew that she was extremely intelligent. Extremely bright. I could tell that she loved the Lord. And I thought that there was real potential there.
So,
after that first date, I took her to meet my parent.
Really?
And I thought he was too good to be true. Like, honestly, because he was, you know, he came, so he had a job. He had this like company car. He already owned a home. He was extremely respectful. Intelligent, like the conversation didn't lag at all. I didn't have to be like, so what do you think about this? Like, it wasn't that, like, we just had a natural flow of conversation. And he was handsome. It's so funny. I laugh about it now, but like, I remember exactly what he was wearing and I was like, okay, you got some style. Okay.
What was he wearing?
He was wearing this sweater that had like this blue stripe across the chest and just some nice jeans and a nice pair of shoes. And I was like, okay, he got some style.
Coming from her, that is a compliment.
But come to find out, y'all, that was his date uniform. That was his one outfit. Like, you know, he had me thinking.
Tim had his own.
He had a date uniform. I thought, I was like, okay. That
was his date uniform. You wear that every time on the first date?
Look, I'm a very basic person. I'm not, that's what I'm saying. Coming from her, the Miss Stylish and everything, that is a compliment coming from her.
And so you took her to meet your parents after the first date. Why?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Context. Me and my father were really, really close. Mm. And so what he always told us when we were growing up, if you ever meet a woman, bring it home to me early so that I can meet her before you start getting your heart into it. I can save you a lot of trouble. So when I saw her, I'm like, man, this Nona is this woman is unlike anybody I've ever seen.
And how old were you during that time?
What was that, like, maybe 26?
Yeah.
26.
Just turned 26, actually.
I graduated. I was off doing my thing, and she was close to graduating herself. So I took her to meet my parents.
I was 19.
True story. 19. My dad had met every other woman that I had ever dated, never said anything about any of them. Listen, bro, the first time he met her, when we went to dinner, I walked on her to the car, got her in, walked my parents back to their car. And he told me, son, that one right there is going to be my daughter-in-law.
First time meeting.
First time he met her.
Never said that before.
Never said that before. And even my reaction was, you know, look, Dad, this is the second time. I don't want to break your heart, but, you know, I don't know her that well. But he was instrumental in my wife and I being even together today.
Well, I remember over that dinner, Dad was like, of course, he wasn't my dad then, but he was like, so, would you describe yourself as an opinionated woman? And I said, well, I think any educated woman is an opinionated woman. So, yes. And I don't know if he wasn't expecting that response, but I remember when I said it, there was almost like this smile in his eyes. And so it foretells of something that happens later.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into. But yeah.
Are you an opinionated woman? Why was that important for you to answer that with truth? Because I know that, you know, first of all, how did you perceive that question?
God is so sovereign in how he does things. Mm. Had I not had the experience of having my heart broken, had that not happened to me, I think I would have walked into that situation wanting so badly to be approved of and liked that I might have said, oh, no, I'm not opinionated. I might have lied to be liked. But I think I was so just raw from the hurt that I was like, I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
And the cards are going to fall where they lie. And so I do think that I was in a place where I was like, either you're going to like me for who I am, or you're going to not like me for who I am, but I'm going to be who I am. And so that's why it was important.
I didn't like her for who she was.
Oh, initially. Yeah. We're going to get into that.
I know it. Uh-huh. I know it. Uh-huh. And so let's move a little forward. So y'all started dating each other. And how long did y'all date each other before you decided to, before you even recognized her as this could be my wife? Because your dad planted that seed early on. What did that dating process look like?
Well, again, when I met Nona, I knew, because you, again, context, I wasn't looking for a girlfriend at that time. Mm-hmm. I really was looking for a wife.
Yeah.
And so whenever I would meet a woman, if I didn't see it heading in the direction of marriage, I just cut it. So I think when I met Nona, if I didn't see us heading in the right direction, which is what happened. So I meet Nona, we're talking, and it took me a while to warm up to her. It took me a while to warm up to her because she's very opinionated, very smart, direct. Right? Very direct. Okay, direct. So, you know, we both had our egos. Mm-hmm. I had graduated. I was doing my thing. I was doing well. And so Nona just had this thing about her. If I said left, why can't we go right? If I said, let's go to get some Chinese, why got to be Chinese? Why can't be this? If I said Kurt Franklin, why got to be Kurt Franklin? Why can't be, you know?
And it was so, more substantive than that.
But he's talking about subtext. It just seems very debatable.
It was just conflict. And so.
Well, let me ask you this. Nona, do you remember something specific?
Yes.
Name something specific.
So, okay. This is why he's about to. Yeah. So my husband, especially at that time, he has softened now. At that time, he would his opinion as if it was a pronouncement of fact, if it was canonized in scripture.
Canonized.
Like, that's how he would talk. So I remember one time we were driving back from Tennessee, and he started to talk about music. And this was around the time, I think, like Kirk Franklin's Stomp had come out. And he was just talking about how, you know, it's just too secular and this whole thing, that and the other. And he was going in, right? And so my view at the time was just that there is a population of people that music ministers to. And if it's not you, don't listen to it. Like, it was just, to me, so cut and dry. But he was like, no, it's wrong. And so we got into this heated debate over that. That was just one example where he felt like it was just wrong. And I was like,
What do you think now, Pastor Tim?
About
that, like, music that crosses over where you hear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's why I say she's right. I think there were elements of pride in my life of where I thought I did know everything. And so to get back to the story with my dad, when I didn't see it heading towards marriage, I saw no other rational thing to do but to end it. Right. And so I call my dad, super close to my dad now. So I call him and I'm telling him, like, hey, Dad, you know, it didn't work out with Nona. You know, she's too opinionated. She's too this. She's too this. And he just sat there because he didn't talk a whole lot. And so it got to the point, bro, to where I'm like, hey, man, you still on the phone? And he said, are you done? And I said, yeah, I'm done. He said, listen, three things. You made a mistake. Call her back and get back with her. And then hung up the phone. Didn't argue back and forth with me. And I think he knew me well enough to know it was going to bother me for the most important figure in my life to say, son, you're making a mistake. And so I started this whole campaign of taking Nona to meet my sisters in North Carolina and Tennessee, trying to prove him wrong. And I think the clincher was my brother, who was a pharmacy student. I mean, man, look, again, I don't mean this in the wrong way. We had graduated, black male, graduated from college, got a job. Women.
He's feeling himself.
Yeah. I mean, women, you know, I mean, if you don't want to act right. Then,
I can find about 20 more.
Come on. Yeah. You know, so, and I'm not saying. Come on,
Faith. No, it's your truth. Tell your truth.
I have matured over the years.
He has.
But at that time, I did not see it that way. So right. When we took it to my brother, and he met her, and he's like, man, I remember that very clear. I don't see nothing wrong with her.
You have to tell
him
how that even happened.
Yeah.
How I met Sam. When you brought him to, he brought him to my apartment as security.
So okay, so bro, here we go. Now you tell me. So the relationship was over.
All right. Right.
I'm just telling you how much she wanted me, right? So the relationship is over. My wife called me. She called me and said, hey, Tim, I got this dresser. Can you help me put some drawer pulls on it? I'm like, well, you just take the thing, put it in, screw the little thing.
I had
on the
never
back.
Used tools before.
Well, I don't know how to do this. Can you come over and help me? So I'm like, you know what? She's trying to get me up over there because obviously, you know. So I take my brother. I take my brother with me because I'm like, hey, man, when I get up in there, let's put this on so we can be gone. So I take him up over there. He starts going through the house and he's like a germ
feet. Germaphobe. Yeah.
He goes to her house and he's like rubbing his hand all over her her dressers and stuff like that. And he's like, man, this is a clean woman. And so then
he was walking around rubbing.
Yeah. While I'm in there doing that.
Yeah.
And goes in the kitchen and, you know, he's checking her out. Then they start talking. And the joker that I take with me to leave ends up inviting her to dinner to go out later that night. And after that, I'm like, you know what? I must be making a mistake. And so we got back together.
Did you even notice that? Was that something important to you, how clean she was?
No, but she was clean. I mean.
So when he brought that to your attention, did you be like, okay.
No, because he's on some other level.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You can go in a place and it's clean. This joke is, he's up in there trying to. You know,
we're on the same wavelength. I love being clean and orderly.
Who go and rub people's dresses?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just be like. Yeah,
he was on some other stuff. But I say this, that Nona, if we would have been apart, that would have been the worst mistake of my life. In every way, she completes me. And everything that I thought was an obstacle with her is still a challenge in the marriage. But I think it strengthens us so much that that's why we're together.
I'm glad you said that. A lot of times people look at differences. My homeboy, Kariga, said this. He says, differences aren't deficits. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes we look at that. We look at, oh, we're different, so that has to be something wrong. Yeah. When that's the refinement that Christ is bringing us through, is because when you have something different and you begin to rub up against each other, it refines you and make you a whole lot better. And I was more like you, where you say that, you know, early on, I felt like I was a know-it-all in my marriage. Hey, I know this. And the things I know to be true, you cannot talk me out of what I know to be true. But it's only true to me. Yes. You know, it's not even true. It's my truth. It's my opinion exemplified in my own mind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, your tradition, your culture, what, you know, what I was brought up in, a very conservative Baptist type background. So a lot of opinions that I had at that time was rooted in that. At your level of understanding it.
Right.
Well, and I think one of the most important marks of humility, just in general, is your willingness to offer your opinion to somebody else for inspection. Your opinion, again, is going to be just grounded in your experience, your understanding, your context. The way I like to think about it is, we live our life on a beach ball, like one strip of a beach ball. And, you know, beach balls can have like a blue strip, a green strip, a white strip, a yellow strip, a red strip. We all live on one strip. And so if I live my life on the green strip and somebody comes and tells me there's something called red, I'm going to vigorously defend the fact that there is no such thing as red. Why? Because I only know green. And so humility says, really, take me to red. Show me red. And I think that heart is what creates a healthy marriage. It creates a healthy relationship. Is to say, if you disagree with me, that's because you have a different perspective, a different vantage point. That doesn't mean that I'm wrong necessarily. Yeah. It just means I don't have the full picture. That's what humility is.
And so after your brother said what he said, how did the relationship, because it was over at this point, right? Mm-hmm. So how did y'all get back together?
I went back to her.
What did you say?
Hey. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what I said, but
no, no, no. Wait, what did you say?
It's so funny. It's so funny how he can remember every detail except for Alice. So we went to dinner. So the dinner was with his parents, his brother, his sister, her family. Went to dinner.
Your brother invited her to come with y'all.
Literally to the family dinner.
He did.
And everybody was attacking him at dinner. Like, it was like, what are you doing, Tim? Like, what? She has a different opinion. Like, what's the problem? And he kept throwing out, he tried to throw out every excuse in the book and they shot it down like target practice. So after dinner, he came to me and he was like, you know,
Weren't we walking on campus?
Yeah. He took me back to campus and we were walking to my dorm. He wanted to take me back to my dorm, make sure I got there safely. And he was like, can we maybe try this again? And I was like, I'll see.
Oh, wow.
I was like, let me check my calendar. See if I can shift some things around.
I got some other dates lined up.
She was like, whatever you like. Come on now. Don't do that.
No, I said yes. And because I knew, the thing I knew about him is that he was a man of integrity. Like, he may have been prideful for sure, but he was a man of integrity.
And principles.
Principles.
Yeah.
Character. And that, honestly, that's again why I say God is so good. Because the guy who broke my heart, not a man of integrity or character. He was good looking, but here's the thing. He was driving my car around town while I was in class using my gas.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
And so I was in a place where it was like, I just had a companion, but I didn't have someone who could lead me or provide vision or anything like that. Then he shows up on the scene and it's like, he was so different, you know, so different, just like stable. There was like peace about him.
So what do you think about that? So when you met him, you know, he's a PK, you know what I'm saying? What was your faith like during that time?
So I've been in ministry since I was 17. I did not grow up in a Christian home, but I became a believer at the age of 12.
Right.
And I would go to church by myself. So I knew Jesus, loved the Lord. When we met, I was already serving in a church in college. I was already preaching at like 17, youth conferences.
You started preaching at 17.
Yeah. I was already doing that. But it's funny because, like, I look at it now. I knew he was a PK, but like, it never occurred to me or really, really dawned on me that he would be in pastoral ministry. Like, really? I just thought we would serve at the church.
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, we'll serve at the church for a little while. Then we'll move because I was planning to become a physician.
You know, made up, to you made up in your mind, y'all gonna move?
Oh, yeah. I was like, we're gonna move to Atlanta, New York. We're gonna move somewhere, big city. No. No, Gainesville was going to be
said,
home.
She said, we're going to move.
Yeah, that's what I had.
Yeah,
I had
we kind of had that discussion because she was in journalism at that time. And they were trying to scoop her to do stations and stuff when she graduated. Mm-hmm. But I kind of knew that I was going to be called to preach there at the church. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of the deal. I mean, like, this is what I feel God is going to be leading me to do. And if we're going to be together, then God will give you peace to do that. So no, we're not going to New York and we're not going every place else.
Not going to Chicago, not going to Los Angeles.
But you know what's so funny? No. Like I remember for the longest time, I was upset about that because I was like, it's Gainesville. Like there's nothing here. You know, I knew in my heart, once I kind of made the change in major, I wanted to be on the corporate track. I wanted to be a business executive. And I was like, there's no way. I was like, there are no executive roles really here. But I submitted to that and God created roles out of thin air.
Were you resentful at a certain point until God created those roles out of thin air?
You know, I think maybe for like a small window of time, I had some resentment because I literally was like, man, there's just nothing here.
Right.
But I started to just settle into the fact that, okay, this is home. This is our home. We have a home. We have a church. This is our family. And it's like, you know what, Lord, you know the desire of my heart. And either you're going to make it happen somehow, or I'm going to be content with what I have.
That's an interesting place to be in, because especially when you have your own dreams and ambition, and you feel like the decision of marrying someone that is settled in their decision and their trajectory can lead to resentment. And I've seen that happen so many times where you have, especially women that say, I've went and I've undergirded, and that's that spiritual word, I've undergirded his vision and I've lost my own identity. Yeah. And so I think that that's a very interesting place to be in where you really... It's not so much you're submitting to the leadership of your husband, but ultimately you're submitting to the leadership of God and say, God, you are God.
Yes.
That I can't lose being in your will. And if you chose this man to be my husband, and which I believe you did, then all things work together for the good of them that love God and to the called according to his purpose. Mm-hmm. And this is the purpose that you place in my life. But a lot of people, they can't see that. Yeah. And so my question to you is that, well, let's go back. How long did it take y'all to date? How long was y'all dating process before you asked her to marry you?
Let's see. We started dating in the fall of 2002 because you had just turned 26, I think. And so started dating then. He dumped me a few months later. So we had a little bit of a break, but we got back together. He proposed in January 2004. And then we married in June 2004. Right. So it was about...
It wasn't a very long...
It was a full year from the little... About a...
Yeah.
Was it even a year?
It was... Well, it was about all in.
Yeah.
I would say about a year and a half.
Yeah.
All in.
So you knew. After your family came... Which, go back to this, because I want to touch on this. How important was it, coming from the home that you've come from, to have a family that's embracing you, to feel family in that sense?
That was everything for me. Everything.
And when he broke up with you, did you feel like you lost that?
In a way, because I definitely saw his family as like the aspiration.
Yeah.
You know, they loved each other, mother, father, you know, they loved each other and I wanted to be a part of that. So I definitely saw that there was kind of a gap that I would be missing in that family.
And then when, to hear the validation of all his family members and siblings, really validate you at that dinner, what did that mean to you?
It was, well, first of all,
went blown.
No, boom. It was hilarious because they basically said to him what I had been saying and I didn't have to say it. And so it was awesome. It was truly awesome to be able to just sit back and just enjoy my meal while they took care of the
they
situation.
They did. It was a very humbling experience.
And what did you feel to hear your family like really root for this woman, did that just make it so much easier to say, okay, listen?
Well, I argue with them. You know, and we went back. But again, it's amazing how God, I give God all the glory for that, man, because I think I was so, I don't know. I think my perspective was so single-like, you know what I mean? Like the single male.
Yeah.
To where my dad instantly saw, she talks about my character. He instantly saw character in her. So he would pull me aside and say, hey, man, don't get caught up in all the looks. All that stuff is going to change anyway. That woman right there is a woman of character. That's who you need to be with.
Yes.
And so I think for me at that time, I was looking at everything superficial. And if this doesn't work, then there's another one. Mm-hmm. And I don't think my mind was in tune on the most important thing that keeps the marriages working. And that's the character, bro. All that, you know, all the looks and stuff is going.
I just had that conversation with the Millers, Jamal and Natasha, who just left before y'all came in, and y'all got a chance to meet them and talk to them. But we talked about the exact same thing, that when you go through those tough times in marriage, it ain't, cuteness don't make you stay around longer. You don't say, well, you cute, I'm going to go ahead and suffer some more. You be like, you know, this character, I don't know if I can get that again.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, in corporate America, they call that those soft skills. You know, when you start saying, that is what I need. Because the Bible says charm is deceptive and beauty doesn't last, but a woman who reverences God is greatly to be praised. And that's what's so needed. But when you look on these social media streets, we see all that, and you see people chasing that.
I get so concerned. I'm really concerned for relationships in this day and age.
Yes.
Because, you know, I worked for the company that owns Instagram for six years.
Yep.
And I see how people wrap their identity in what they think is another person's reality. But in fact, it's another person's fiction because it's not even real. Like they're sharing the highlight reel. They're sharing. But what I've seen it happen, I know it to be true. Couples that are like, oh, I'm so in love when they're on the brink of divorce.
True.
Like people just are like, why can't you do this for me? Look at what he's doing for her. And they're in debt doing it, you know? And so it's created this just artificial measurement system, which is not based on reality. So I do think character really, really matters. And one of the beautiful definitions I heard of character is how far a person will go if they thought no one would ever find out. Hmm. And I know of some women who have, they are with men who are very wealthy, famous, have all the power, the influence. They're also unfaithful. And so they have the Instagrammable life that everybody admires and everyone's liking and commenting and sharing and all this, while the woman is literally heartbroken because she cannot trust that he is faithful to her. Mm-hmm. And so that character piece, that matters.
How far you would go if no one else was looking?
Yeah.
That is deep.
Yeah.
It makes you take introspective look at yourself and say, what would I do if I could never get in trouble from it?
If no one would find out. Character is your personally imposed constraint. Right. And so one of the things my husband and I talk about, because, you know, I travel a lot, preach in all types of contexts. I tell my husband, it's like my faithfulness, my fidelity to you is not based on opportunity, because there is opportunity. My fidelity is based on my reverence for God. At the end of the day, that's what constrains me. That's what constrains him. We've talked about this many times. Sure. It's like, look, there's plenty of opportunity, but it's like, wait a minute. My commitment is to God first. So even if you over there acting a fool, I'm not about to be up in my DMs. Like, let me see who I can reach out to. No, because my commitment is to God first. That's what character is. My commitment is to God first.
I will say this, and people have heard me say share this on my podcast, is that when I was unfaithful to my wife when I was married, she said, you know what? I thought about getting back at you and being unfaithful, but I didn't want to become you.
Oof.
And that was the worst thing she said. It broke me. Man down. Because she basically said, even when I want revenge, that's so outside of my character, of who I am, that I won't even allow your deficiency to make me become less than who I am as a person. Yes. And it made me go, wow, like, who would, like, that's the worst thing that you can say to somebody, especially someone like me who tries to believe at that time that I was a great person. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, wow, like I'm despicable. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, this is very, but that's what I lived with. That's what has been embedded in my mind. But she created a standard in my mind to say, no matter what somebody else does to me, even if I'm hurt, even if somebody mismanages my heart, that I need my character to be so resolute that I'm unshakable. Yes. And then I go, okay, if this is not working out, it's just not working out. But I don't begin to diminish who I am and my core values, which is so important. And so how did you propose to old Nona?
So everyone in both of our families knew. She didn't. I invited her to come to Panama City where I was. I had already purchased a ring. I told her mom that I was going to propose to her when she came. She came over. I had cooked her a nice dinner, slayed it. I mean, she was in there just licking her fingers, everything. But I mean, I
licking the plate.
Oh,
too.
My God.
What'd you make?
I think I made a jambalaya or something, right?
I made
a jambalaya.
Okay.
And so
juices and berries and
together. So we ate, and then I asked her to come sit down, and you correct me if I'm wrong. When she sat down, I had already had the ring underneath where she was sitting at. And so she sat down and I think I was talking to you about something, and she was just kind of looking around, but she didn't know as I was getting on a knee and preparing to bring the ring out. And so I brought the ring out, presented it to her, asked her if she would marry me. And so grateful she said yes.
So what did you think when he said that? Did you see it coming?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. So my mom and I have a very strained relationship. We're not in fellowship for various reasons, but at that time we were talking.
Yeah, yeah, church people talk. We weren't in fellowship.
We weren't in fellowship. season of broken fellowship. We were talking at that time, and I remember she called me because I called her to tell her I was heading up to Panama City. I was like, yeah, Tim. And I had what's crazy is, so I was president of my sorority at the time, and I had a chapter meeting that weekend. And I'm supposed to lead the meeting. And he was like, no, I need you to come up here this weekend. I was like, I have a meeting. I was so angry. And I was like, man, I have a meeting. I called my mom. I'm like, look, I'm about to get on the road, head up to Panama City. Here she go. Just make sure you look pretty. Hung up the phone. I was like, okay. I was like, there's something about to go down. Just hung up the phone on my face. I said, because my mom can't hold water.
She said,
make sure you look pretty. I said, oh, Lord. So I was expecting something.
Yeah.
But the way that he did it was just, it was so endearing. Like, even as he was just describing it now, like, my heart was just like, feeling warm because I just remember that moment. Oh, yeah.
How did it make you feel?
Just awesome. Because I knew by then, like, I knew that this is the man I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, you know? And so the fact that it actually happened was surreal to me.
Let me ask y'all this. How much does God weigh in on determining one spouse? Because like, even when you talk about your family, your father and all that, where did God come in? Was there any type of consultation of God, and we fasted and asked God to reveal to us in the burning bush? Yeah. Like, what happened?
Sackcloth and ashes.
Yeah, sackcloth and ashes. What happened?
Well, I would just say for me, again, I had been praying for a wife for months to years.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, real talk, praying and asking God for a wife. So when I found her, I knew that it was something that I wanted to move forward on. And so once we got through the initial, you know, heartbreak, you know, all that type of stuff, and I recognized that she was the one, I just went after her. You know what I mean? I had to have her. And so I think when you talk about God, I think when your heart, God sometimes will give you what you're asking for.
The desire of your heart.
Right? I wasn't asking for another woman to date. I really, before God, was asking for a wife. And when I was asking for that, man, it took years. I mean, I had been on many dates with different women, and it just, there was always something to where it didn't work. And when I found Nona, I thought it was an answer to prayer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just so blessed that she said yes.
Yeah, I was in a season of prayer too, because again, mm-hmm. after that whole situation with my ex, like I remember distinctly my prayer was, Lord, I was so hurt. I was like, Lord, if it is your will for me to be single for the rest of my life, I will serve you with everything I have.
Did you really believe that?
Yes. Yes.
So what was that? That was after the heartbreak?
Yeah, it was after the heartbreak, because I think it was from my childhood and the trauma of my childhood, physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, the whole thing. I was already very tenuous about relationships, like mm-hmm. this idea of being vulnerable with someone. And then for that to happen, it's like it crushed me in a very deep way. And I know some people have experienced heartbreak and it hurts, but it's like it's a double hurt when you've been so protective of yourself because of childhood trauma that you haven't even allowed yourself to love someone. And so my prayer to God was sincere. I was like, Lord, listen, I can't handle that type of hurt. So if your will is for me to be single for the rest of my life, I will serve you with everything I have. And so when I met him, it's like I think I was able to receive him. I was able to receive who he was, as just a man of God and a man of integrity, because that's what I needed.
Yeah, because the truth of the matter is, when we were on campus, I don't mm-hmm. think we would have met. Mm-mm. We were in two totally different circles. Yeah. You know, I was working full time mm-hmm. while going to school, work at night, so forth. So I think God had to get her and myself to the place to where, when we actually saw and met each other, that we would be to the point to where what we were looking for was the right things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because at some point you're not really looking, you know, you're not really looking for the same things. So I think mm-hmm. all of the things that transpired with her, as well as with myself, when we got to that point, we were ready to receive each other.
The journey of love is different for different folks, especially when we say I do, then we start hitting turbulent times. When was the first time that you remember turbulence entering into the marriage, and y'all, you know, was it stages where you questioned whether or not y'all were the ones for each other?
I mean, other than normal, you know, spats, whatever, I think probably with the boys, you know, when we started having children. Because early on,
we had some issue with the church.
Okay.
I remember, because the church, so it's family church. And, you know, he was very much so the golden child. All right. So family church, golden child. I was a woman coming into the church. Nobody knew me. And so there were some people who did not like me. And made it pretty clear that they didn't like me. And so I would tell him things that they would do. And because he knew them and he grew up with them, he was just like, no, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, I'm just telling you, this is what I'm experiencing. And it was hurtful because they would be rude. They'd walk by me without talking, spread lies and rumors about me. And I would tell him, and he was like, oh, they wouldn't do that. And it wasn't until there was a pretty significant dust up where I think they said something in his face about me.
Well, I heard it,
He was like, oh, this is really happening. But for, I don't know, a couple of years, that was a source of a significant tension for us.
Sure.
At that time, what was your position at the church during that time?
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
No, I was, I don't remember. I don't remember exactly when that was, but I was in leadership of some sort.
Mm-hmm, in leadership.
I can't remember if I was pastoring at that time, but,
I think so.
She's right. These were people that I knew. These were mainly family members, who for whatever reason, just, they didn't click. And she would tell me about it. She's right. I would defend them. And the time she's talking about was something to where I actually heard they let something come out the mouth wrong a little bit. And when I heard it, it was on.
Yeah.
Bruh, I mean, look, can we just be transparent?
Yeah, that'd be real.
I mean, we out in the parking lot getting ready to the rumble.
Church folk.
In the parking lot.
Tim, you ready to box?
Listen.
I mean, you know, particularly when it's family, because you don't expect it to be from family.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I could have dealt with it easier if it was someone else, but when it was family and that, you know, and then it all just hit me at once, all the things she would tell me about, and I would kind of disregard it. And when it hit me, you know, it had to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So when you saw his response to that, how'd that make you feel?
In some ways relieved.
Yeah.
Because I was like, finally, but in other ways still hurt. And we've talked about this too, to where I was like, it took that to happen for the kind of defense to take place. To where it's like, on the one hand, I was relieved, but on the other hand, I was like, man, it took all that. But I was grateful for it.
About a couple of years at that point.
Yeah. So it, I was grateful for it. I was like, thank you. Because they would just be trying me. And the thing is, again, like, because of the way I grew up, like I'm really sensitive to criticism anyway. And so when people disliked me and I didn't even know why, it was really hurtful because I have a natural tendency to want to love other people and be loving to other people. So it was an experience of rejection.
Yeah.
To where I was being rejected and I was just like, I didn't do anything. I don't think I did. And if I did, tell me.
Yeah. Family drama is real, man. And I think where I messed up was I didn't establish the boundaries.
Yeah.
And it crept in there, and it did cause problems.
Yeah.
You begin to touch on when kids came into play.
Mm-hmm.
Elaborate on that.
So for what, the first 5-6 years of our marriage, you know, we were just living it up, traveling it all over the place. And then when we finally got to the point to start trying to have kids, you know, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. There was a period to where, I mean, we were, you know, we were definitely trying, but
he said, let's be clear, we were trying.
We were trying. We're getting the prerequisites. Yeah.
For the course.
It
was not happening. And so then that was a challenge because, you know, for me, the whole thing of perhaps seeing infertility and not being able to have children was not expected.
Right.
Well, and we went to the doctor because, we're doing what we thought we should do and it wasn't happening. And so went to the doctor and I got diagnosed with infertility, specifically a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which actually affects, it affects a lot of women.
Yep.
At the time I was considered morbidly obese. And so that's part of one of the kind of pre-indicators of PCOS.
You said morbidly obese.
Yes.
You were that big back in the day?
Oh yeah, I was close to 300 pounds. I was about 250. He doesn't believe it. When I show him the pictures, this is how you know he loved me.
Come on.
Because when I show him the pictures, he'll be like, wow. Like, because he didn't notice.
Tim, you didn't notice he was about 300 pounds?
But
that was after you had one of the babies, right?
No, it was, well, I would say, I was about, no, you're right. I was around 200 when I was diagnosed with PCOS.
Right.
After I started having the babies, I got up to about 280.
Right.
But, it was PCOS. And so I got diagnosed with infertility and my doctor tried to prescribe some medicine because she was like, this could be medicinally treated. But before we even took the medication, I took a pregnancy test and it was positive.
We prayed about it.
Yeah.
Didn't want to get on that medication. And we prayed.
Yeah.
And God showed
before you took the medication.
Yeah, before I took the medication and went to have, you know, the ultrasound done. And there were two heartbeats. Like, we were
super excited.
So excited. Listen, we were so excited that we left that appointment, went to a car dealership immediately,
yep,
and bought this like big old van type SUV.
Yep.
Went back a couple weeks later and there were no more heartbeats. And it was so devastating, because even though, like, my undergraduate, I had done quite a few years of microbiology and cell science, I understood that miscarriage happens. It just never occurred to me that that would be our story. And so, yeah, it was devastating. But got pregnant again. I think that was maybe a few months later.
Still, how did y'all navigate that space?
The miscarriage?
Yes.
We didn't really tell anybody. Mm-mm. We just kind of took it.
Dealt with it.
Yeah, ourselves.
So y'all never even told them that you were pregnant?
Mm-mm. No,
because not at that point. It was still too early.
Yeah, yeah.
We were like 8 weeks by then, so it was still early. We didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, and then you got pregnant with TJ, and he came 26 weeks.
Yeah, 2 pounds 9 ounces.
Two pounds.
Held him in my hand, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a very trying time, man, because he was in the NICU for what, over 3 months.
It was 3.5 months. Yeah.
And, you know, anybody who's ever had a preemie, you know, you're hearing all types of reports about what's going to happen to him. Yeah. He's not going to function right.
Yeah.
His organs not going to develop, you know, just all that type of stuff. There were times we thought we were going to have to rush him into surgery, and we're just praying there all night. It was a very, very rough time.
It was very, very challenging
for us. But God is good, man, because my son is now 14 years old, taller than I am. Yeah. Talking foolishness, he gonna dunk on me. And
listen, this kid had the nerve, I think it's maybe a week and a half ago, I told him to do something. He had the nerve to be like, man, listen, before he could even get his full thought out, I don't know what took over me.
Oh, God.
But let's just say,
you know, snatched him up.
He knew to never try me.
She got what you do.
She got a little New Jersey.
Listen, yeah, listen, my son, he saw a side of me that he never, and I was just like, see, you're taller than me, so we not having conversations no more, right? Like, no, square up. let's get this.
We're gonna go to blows.
Listen, you don't. I love Jesus.
Grabbing the sword of spirit.
I love Jesus, and I throw hands. Amen. Praise the Lord.
Try Jesus.
Yeah.
Don't try me.
Yeah, listen.
I throw hands.
Yeah, but he is healthy.
Doing
now.
Well, straight student, doing good, yeah. Bro.
Isn't that amazing to see that? You said 2.9 ounces.
He was 2 pounds 9 ounces, 13 inches, little tiny something. Yeah.
All the tubes through him.
Yep.
Healthy.
Now he's taller than me. Down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you saw him, you wouldn't even know. And that's a testimony of God, man. I mean, in fact, you remember when we were taking him to rehab, because the first year, you know, you have to take him to rehab because they're behind.
Yeah.
And the therapist kept telling her,
ugh, he's going to have ADHD. He's going to have learning disabilities. I remember we would go and I would have to literally pray in the car before we walked in because I knew this lady was going to speak some doom and gloom over him. And I think we went to maybe 3 or 4 appointments and I was like, we're done. Yep. I was like, we're going to figure this out on our own. I'm going to buy some occupational therapy books and figure out what I need to do with him.
We just stop going.
Watch YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you're not speaking this doom and gloom over my baby. No, ma'am. We stopped going.
Why did you just tell us stop saying it?
Because I wouldn't have been able to say it.
In a healthy way?
No, I wouldn't have been. I couldn't
respond
open my mouth.
Like you did your son.
Listen.
Well, and not only just that, what she was speaking, if anybody knows anything about preemies, in some ways is factually true.
It is.
You may run into a lot of that.
They want to manage your expectations.
Yeah, I don't think she necessarily meant it from a bad place as much as it was. I think she was projecting what may have happened to others onto her son. That's what
she didn't just. She didn't frame it as it's possible that he may be. It was like, this is what's going to happen, and I said, no, ma'am.
Yeah.
No, man.
She said I wasn't going to say it right.
No, I was not going to say it right.
She said I'm going to start watching YouTube videos.
We did. And so that's just God. That's God. But I will say, even through that journey, man, like, you know, it's just it's so emotional that there were some times when, like, we had to learn through that how to be each other's strength.
That's what I was about to ask you.
Yeah. Because there were
how
times.
How did y'all manage that?
Yeah. I remember.
Lots of prayer, man. We had everybody praying and
walking through the halls of the hospital. My husband did have to pull me back a few times because what I would do is I would read my son's chart every day because I wanted to see his progress. I understood what the terms meant. I understood everything. And so when the doctors would do the rounds, I didn't really have questions because I already read his chart. Well, one day I saw something in his chart. This was maybe a month and a half in of me reading his chart every day. I saw
something in his chart, and I went
to ask the nurse what it was. She snatched the chart out of my hand and said, "You're not supposed to be looking at this." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Okay." And so thank Jesus for holy restraint. I got in touch with the CEO of the hospital, who I actually knew. And when they found out that I knew the CEO of the hospital, because they didn't know, like I didn't walk in there like, "Let me tell y'all who I know." But when we had to pull that card, we did. And once we did, they got themselves together. But my husband was the one who was like, "Babe, go ahead and calm down, babe. Let's go ahead and just calm down, honey.
What does your son say to know that that was his beginnings and this is where he's at right now?
He doesn't recall anything. So I think,
I mean, when you even tell him the story, when you still like
show the pictures.
Yeah, because when I was born, my mom, this is how awesome God is that my mom had a brother, my Uncle Thomas, who had heavy bouts of asthma. Mm. And he would always wake her up and be like, while he's wheezing or whatnot, and make her sit up with him in the middle of the night. She's like, "Don't be waking me up. I don't want to see you die." You know, and she's a little kid. Oh, no. So he's like, "You're going to watch me die." She said she used to always wake up. She's like 12 years old or something. Wake up. And that was the sister he wanted. And she had like a lot of sisters, brothers and sisters. She said, "I don't want to watch you die." And so hearing that wheezing.
Yeah.
When I was born and she told the doctor, my baby ain't breathing right. Oh, he'll be all right. He'll grow out of it. He'll be all right. Mm. He said, I was at home playing with toys and I was barely breathing. She was like, "This don't sound right." It reminded her of her brother who was struggling to breathe when he was younger. And so she took me to the doctor. And the doctor said, had you brought him any moments later, he would have been dead.
Wow.
I was breathing. Wow. They said that my windpipe was about the width of a ballpoint pen, the tip of the pen, not the base of it, but the tip of it. I was getting air. She said, but I wasn't crying. I wasn't doing nothing. I was just wheezing. And they put me in a incubator, like a baby crib. It's like, it's like a little crib with an oxygen tank over it.
Yeah,
sure.
That's an incubator.
And so, I was in that. And so I thought about that the other day. I woke up one morning, I was thinking about that. I said, the devil tried to take me out early.
Yes.
And I thought about that memory just a couple of days ago. And I was like, wow. And it was like God was reminding me of purpose. That when he has purpose inside of you, just like Moses, who was meant to be killed, he was meant to be killed early on. And his mom had the forethought to place him in the river. Yes. And then everything that he learned in his tutelage by being raised by a king was what he needed in order to deliver the children of Israel. Yes. God is so intentional on when he has a calling over your life. And so that's the reason I ask when your son, it may not even be the time for him to recognize that. It may not be his aha moment when he looked back and be like, 2.9 ounces.
Yeah.
23 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was born like this. Mm-hmm. And look at me now. Mm-hmm. I don't even look like what I've been through. And when he starts walking in his fulfilled purpose, God is going to give him that aha moment back to that moment and be like, you're a walking miracle.
Yes.
Like you're a walking miracle. And as you said, the scholars, the doctors, the people that are very wise in their profession was being real and trying to level set expectations and say, hey, listen, I just want you to know this is what's going to happen. He's going to have ADHD. He's going to have these deformities. He's going to have this or whatever. And he's an A honor roll student.
That's right.
Healthy. And then you look at that and be like, God is a miracle worker.
Yes. He is.
God is a miracle worker. Mm-hmm. So that's what made me interested in what his thoughts may have been, because I just recently had that thought about how I came into this earth. And then when I look at what God has created in this platform, I go, okay, I see why the devil tried to take me out.
It hasn't hit him yet, but I think it will.
It's going to. Mm-hmm. It's going to, because that's an amazing, amazing testimony. And so as y'all navigated through that space as married couples, did that pull y'all closer to each other, or was there moments where there was division and separation that y'all had to become intentional through counseling, through the wisdom of your parents or whatnot, that said, hey, listen, I need y'all to, you know, tap in the more with each other?
What do you think?
I feel like we were just so grateful. Like, I remember the day he was released on Mother's Day. In 2010.
You see what I'm saying?
On Mother's Day. And so it was the best Mother's Day present. So I remember when we laid him in his crib for the first time. And of course, he was 3 months old by then.
Very tiny.
Still small, but 3 months old by then. I think we just felt such a relief to where it was like our baby's home. And I thank God that we didn't have, I know that there are couples, as a matter of fact, there's a couple that we've been working with now, whose daughter's been navigating some challenging things, and they've had a lot of challenges in their marriage.
Yep.
I think crisis exposes the cracks, right? Crisis really has a way of exposing the cracks in the foundation of your marriage. Mm-hmm. For us at that time, I thank God that we were on the same page. And we knew we just had to be there for each other and lean on each other.
We had an interesting conversation, Tim, about watching this powerhouse, this woman who's preaching across the United States, how you originally envisioned that that would be what you had been called to. But then you realize you don't even have the capacity for that because you don't even roll like that. You know that you have been called to the local body of Christ and becoming a shepherd of the house and not operating in the role of an evangelist. How did y'all navigate that space?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I met Nona, I don't think she had any inkling that this is what she would be doing, what she's doing now.
Not at all.
Would you agree?
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't think she had, when we met, the assumption was that as the pastor that I would be doing all this and Nona might be home.
Yeah.
Taking care of
sitting on the front row with my big old first lady hat and my lap cloth. Yeah. That's what I thought I would do.
Yeah. And so I think for me, it has been a challenge because sometimes I've had to look at it and say, you know, man, God has a crazy sense of humor when I look at it. But I've learned, and I think it was easier for me because I've seen with my wife that every opportunity that has come her way has not been something that she has tried to make happen.
That's good.
Right. And so it's one thing when you see someone out hustling, trying to do something. I know that the things that have happened has been God. And so how can you argue with God? I think early on, it was a challenge because there were periods to where, you know, my wife would be traveling all the time, bro. I mean, I remember when I first took over as senior pastor of the church we pastor at, I was in grad school. I went back to seminary. I'm in there cramming and, you know, she flies in for a day or two. The next thing you know, she's flying out for another week, come home for a day. The next thing she's flying out. And there was just all these different things that were going on. And it was, there were definitely some periods in there to where it was challenging. But I think what I've learned is not only did I see God doing it, but really, honest and truly, I just am not wired to do that. My heart, my gifting is more so passionate and fueled towards the local church, caring for people there locally, taking care of people. I speak and do things elsewhere, but to the level of what she's doing all the time, I don't think I have the gifting or the anointing or the desire to do it. I praise my wife because she will go out, speak, do all these things, come home at midnight on a Saturday night and still get up and come to church, preach, sing, do whatever else is necessary because that's how she's wired.
No. Did you suffer from mommy guilt?
Oh, yeah.
Traveling around and your kids at home?
Yeah. Mommy guilt, the whole thing. Because I think I said it earlier, like my vision for my life was just the corporate track.
Right.
You know, I thought I would, which I have, but like get to the C-suite, maybe be CEO of an organization or something and be home, you know, with my family. And so again, you know, God created roles out of thin air.
Yeah.
And I would say I've only held two roles in the city that I live in. Every other organization I've served was based somewhere else. And then, you know, I get to the company formerly known as Facebook, and now it's a global role.
Yeah.
And so, you know, members of my team all over the world. And now I'm traveling not just to Jacksonville, Florida, an hour and a half away. I may be in London. Really? Australia.
Oh, yeah.
I may be South America. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, put this in perspective. Like, how many times a month would you be traveling when you're just from corporate America?
Okay, so we're not even talking speaking. We're talking about work.
Because at that time, when you were still, was your speaking career on fire during that time?
So it's interesting. It kind of happened concurrently. Okay. Like, so I mentioned I've been in ministry since I was 17. So the extent of what I thought my ministry would be was at our church.
Right.
You know, teaching at our church occasionally. I'm talking about like Mother's Day. You know, I'm not even talking about once a month, just like once or twice a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I start working at Facebook. And what happened was I was asked to speak on behalf of the company at some different church conferences, but it was more so technology related. And so I would do that and the people would hear me and they would invite me to preach on their Sunday service or something, or maybe at their women's conference outside of that. And so that's kind of how it happened, but it was not my goal. It was not my intent. I remember even telling Tim, I was like, I don't know who these people are that are reaching out asking. I didn't have a team. I didn't have a process. I was just like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, I'll do it.
I'll pull up.
Yeah, I'll pull up. No big deal. So it just kind of evolved. I would say concurrent because again, Facebook is where I started to get more into church circles. I had been speaking professionally in many different circles, but I think it was in church circles at Facebook because I was the global head of faith partnerships. And so that's how I got those connections. But I was already speaking in business circles, even in political circles. That's where the ministry side started to pick up.
And okay, it was totally unexpected. Going at the same time. So how long were you gone? How many days a week?
He said it like it could be anywhere from 3 to 4 days a week gone. Yeah. Like back to back to back to back to back every single week, back to back. So when you talk about mommy guilt,
God,
it was a lot. It was a lot.
Mommy guilt, wife guilt.
All of
that's
it.
What it is.
Church wife guilt. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Being gone. And I would even tell him because he'd be like, you know, it must be nice. I was like, it's not. I promise you.
Because you feel like she's relieved of all responsibilities when she leaves.
Yeah, she'd be out eating at all these fancy restaurants.
Listen.
You sit there watching. Yeah. Like, okay,
I would be up late at night working because that's the thing. I would be in meetings all day.
Sure.
So I would have to catch up on work at night and prepare for upcoming speaking engagements. And then I finally just a publisher reached out to me and was like, hey, we want you to write a couple books. So then there was that. And so there was no downtime at all.
Would you have done anything different?
I would have loved earlier on to find the balance so that I could be home more because there's a lot that I missed with my boys in particular. You know, times that they maybe had some games or recitals, things during the week, and I would be on the other side of the country or the world watching over FaceTime or Zoom, but that's not ideal. I want to be in there with my babies. So that I would do differently.
So with hindsight being 2020 and all the things that those positions afforded you, is that realistic that you could have found balance in that, doing both?
You know, hindsight, I think there's some things I could have done differently.
Okay.
When you're in the thick of it, though, it's like, man, I got to just do what we're doing. You know what I mean?
I'm on my grind.
So, hindsight is one that gives you options, which is why the season I'm in now, I'm able to apply what I learned from hindsight. So now, like, I may at most do 2 engagements a month. Well, that's the goal now. It's been quite a bit over these last couple of months.
I'm about to say, last month you did more than two.
Listen, once those 2 get filled, it's like I'm not available because I want to be there with my family during the week, go to the games, et cetera.
But you still have a corporate America job in corporate America.
Actually, at the end of 2023, the Lord spoke very clearly to me that he was calling me away from that day-to-day corporate leadership role. And so I've stepped off the YouVersion team. I was there for a year leading an awesome team there. And now I'm the global ambassador for YouVersion, which allows me to have the full-time ministry, build up my own businesses, which I've always had my own businesses, but now I can lean into that full-time, be home with my family. Like it's a blessing.
So as a global ambassador, what does that entail?
So speaking on behalf, it's kind of like a brand role. So speaking on behalf of the organization, being a face of YouVersion and the Bible app in different spaces, speaking at some of the key events and just being a champion for or what YouVersion represents.
I need to learn more about YouVersion. I know my my brand manager had mentioned that to me when I told her that I was interviewing you, and she said, tell her to tell you about something about like y'all may team up with like a, a person to read a scripture or do something. Yes. What do y'all do?
That's called what y'all do over there?
What y'all do over there? Because you were telling me something today. I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, so it's called guided scripture. So every day we will have somebody just offer their thoughts on whatever the verse of the day is.
Oh, okay.
And so that is actually engaged by about 1 million people every day, all over the world, who are learning from that person. You can have Bible plans. There's so many different ways that you can have content in the app. And so, yeah, I know somebody that can help you with that.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, let me know what that is. Because she sure told me to ask you.
I can help you with that.
What am I doing? What are you asking me to say again?
You got it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what she was talking about. But she's like, that's big. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, thank you for educating me. What would you have done differently, Pastor Tim, watching your wife navigate through that space and trying to find balance and home and that home and work life balance? What when you look back, what could you have done differently as a leader to help her navigate that space?
I think I would have been a little more forceful in what I wanted.
Right.
So there were times to where Nona would be traveling all over the place and I would probably act more like I was upset rather than kind of saying, look, you're traveling too much.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
Yeah.
Or let's really look at how do we pull this back. The thing I love about Nona is when you talk about a virtuous woman, with all the success and everything that she has had, she's always respected me. So anything that I've asked of her to do, if I would have asked her to curve this back or to do this or do whatever it is, she would do it. I mean, even if she didn't want to do it, she would do it. Similar, like when we were talking about staying in Gainesville, she would do it. So I think for me, there were periods of severe resentment to her during that time because I felt like she was off just going with all these people while all this stuff is going on here. And bro, I mean, like I said, it was to the point to where you would be gone 4 days, come home for a day, and then jump back on the plane and be gone 3-4 days. Yeah. At some point, it was to me like, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
Like, you're allowing this job, people, whatever, to get you all over the place. And at home, like, I'm your husband, and I need to see you more than one day every year, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I could have been more of a more intentional in what I really wanted versus expecting her to get it from the behaviors that she saw that I was doing.
And I'm so petty, I would have called in for an interview and I would say, I want to hire you for this position of wife. And this is the job description.
Well, but you know what? I will tell you, and I think I'd love his perspective on this too. During that time, I felt a lot of pressure. Because when he went into full-time ministry at the time, when he was working in corporate, you know, he's making good money. Right. And when he went into full-time ministry, because our church was small, they couldn't afford his salary. So he had to take like a, I don't know, 50-60% pay cut.
Right.
Thankfully, I was able to absorb it because I got a promotion into a role and all that.
Yeah,
but,
during
that season, it was like, if there was anything more that our family needed or wanted, like I had to figure out how to make it happen because the church just couldn't.
Yeah.
And so I felt a tremendous amount of pressure. Like, okay, I want better for my family. I want us to be able to go do things. And it's like, I have to figure out how to bring that money in because our church just couldn't do it.
Right.
And so that's where I think we needed to probably have the conversation just to be like, okay, what do we want for our family? Because there was a time where I wanted to leave Facebook. Like I did. I was like, look, I'm tired. but that would have been such
a pay decrease.
It would have radically changed our lifestyle. So,
and that's what I love is when couples are able to navigate those tough seasons, to be able to just, but like he said, it's, and I recognize too, that in that same time too, he has that same level of guilt. Say, well, dang, she is doing this. She is providing and supplementing this great portion of our finances.
Sure.
I don't want to be a hater. You know, I don't want to be like, well, you need to do this now, because that has its own consequences. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so he's trying to find that balance with his own emotions as well as the logical side of a man's brain, which is, Well, we do need it, but emotionally, I need my wife too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm tired of going to bed by myself. You know what I'm saying? So that's the part that that I'm encouraged by, is that y'all can look back, see what could have been done better about balance. As a single man, I feel like I'm very imbalanced. I Teray wrote a book called Balance. And when he came on the podcast, he was talking to me and I was like, I was just praying to God about that right there. And I still haven't read the book because I haven't balanced enough time to read the book. And that was about a year ago.
But oh my gosh. So, I'm going to need you to get some balance.
Yeah, I need some balance. I may have to listen to the audio version but while I'm on the plane. So
heading to the next thing.
Head to the next thing.
That's balanced about.
I was trying to give me some balance while I'm on my way to my next event, which I came in from Vegas today. And then I fly out to Houston to do the podcast at a place tomorrow morning. But so the reality is that I love the fact that y'all are navigating that space and y'all's marriage was able to weather that storm.
Yeah.
And so that's the beautiful thing about what I find encouragement about that. When you think about, I'm allow y'all to say whatever's on your heart as we get ready to wrap up, whatever's on your mind. Mm. And one after the other, Nona, that's y'all's camera right there. Start with you and speak to whether you want to speak to women, married couples, singles, whatever's on your heart.
Yeah. I would say marriage gets such a bad rap. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, we see so many examples of marriage failure. We see those all the time. And it can end up, I think, discouraging you to the place where it's like, man, I don't want to be married. Or is there hope for me? What I hope that you understand and what you maybe have gotten out of our conversation is, number one, our marriage is not perfect.
Right.
Trust and believe.
Yeah.
We ain't even get into all the spiritual warfare. That's going to have to be a follow-up. But
do it.
But y'all, marriage is what you make it. Oh. That's one of the things that we learned early on. And I think that's the thing that we keep coming back to, is that your marriage can be miserable if you make it miserable. Mm. It can be amazing if you make it amazing. Whatever you work on it to be is what it will become. And so I don't want you to lose heart. I don't want you to lose hope and feel discouraged because you see all these examples of failure and people just, you know, saying, don't get married. Listen, with God, you can have the fruit of the Spirit in your marriage. You can have joy, peace, long-suffering, patience. You can have that, but you have to work at it. And so I hope that that encourages you. That's what I would say.
That's good. Tim.
Yeah, I think for me, I think marriage is tough. It's challenging. And it becomes difficult when you start allowing narratives to define your marriage that aren't biblical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think where a lot of couples start getting into trouble, particularly those who start to develop a platform, is that they start allowing everyone's opinions to define your marriage and your relationship with your spouse.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that my wife and I have tried to do was always just keep a biblical perspective with these things. Yeah. So we talk about this. We've always had this idea of one team, one dream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So some men, listen, some men can't handle that you have a successful wife.
Yep.
And I don't see what the problem with that
is.
Why men should we try to hold our wives back from being everything that God has called them to be?
Exactly.
God calls you to do something. God calls them to do something. And when the more successful your wife is, the more successful you are, the more successful your husband is. So we should never be trying to limit who they are and what they can be because of some societal model. When I look at my wife, we're talking about all this stuff about, you know, money and people, you know, look, I look at it like this. God blessed our family. I don't care if it comes through me or if it comes through her. Yeah. No, I don't care if it came through my son. If he started playing, it doesn't matter. I think the goal is the more successful either one is, you have to have the team concept.
Yes.
And the better we do or the better either one of us do, the better the entire relationship does. And so my encouragement is if you're arguing about something in your marriage, I personally believe that you have people sometimes who aren't married or they are married, but they're miserable trying to define what your marriage should be.
Yeah.
And your marriage context may be different. You may be married to a high income earning woman. And so therefore you hear other people talking about emasculation or whatever it is. Man, listen, just support one another. I've never with my wife, and I think I'm thankful for her. I always try to support her in anything that she does. If she's speaking somewhere, if I can do it, I'm going to be there. And it's vice versa. So I just believe don't allow unbiblical thoughts to come into your marriage to define what your husband should be or what your wife should be. I consider my wife a Proverbs 31 woman. Right. She goes out. She earns. She sells her business. She does a whole lot of different things out there to take care of her household. We both contribute. We contribute in different ways. But I just say let the Bible kind of define some of the things rather than allowing all these people who ain't happy themselves to define.
That's good. Define your marriage. You got me so interested about this warfare that y'all have experienced.
I'm telling you, that's a whole other show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you.
I need y'all back. I need y'all back to talk about the warfare that was kind of hard to get.
That's
get
real.
Tim somewhere. So let's just let's touch on it right now.
Let's touch on it. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think some of those challenges have come from periods and times to where I know Nona spoke about this before she went to Facebook. And before I started working for the church, you know, we were kind of somewhat close in terms of money. She had certain roles that to where she started making, but when she went to Facebook, that changed everything. It shifted the whole dynamic. And I think there were periods to where, you know, and I can't speak for you, but I think there were periods there to where she probably did feel a lot of pressure, from having to carry a lot of those different roles. And you know, we both have different companies, businesses, and things that we do outside of the church. But I think that's where some of the tension and stuff have come in there as well.
There as well as because we are in ministry.
Yeah.
There is just a target on us. Like, you know, some people say the devil is attacking them. Like, oh, the devil after my house, he after my car, he after my lights. Like, listen to me. If you pay those bills, you will retain authority over that stuff, right? But what the devil wants more than anything is he wants your witness. And so for us, I would say the spiritual warfare has been the enemy trying to trigger our insecurities, you know, trying to plant seeds, lies about, oh, well, what did he mean by that? And, oh, well, what did she mean by that? And so you end up seeing each other as the enemy.
Yep.
And it becomes a diversion from the true enemy. And so for us, being that we're in ministry, we have to be vigilant because, look, we love the people who come to our church, and the enemy will work through anybody in order to drive a wedge in marriage. And so, you know, even now, like we've, for whatever reason, God has started to call us into a marriage ministry with a larger platform. The enemy has tried to come in through various means to be like, oh, let's stir up strife here, stir up strife there. And we just had to be vigilant. Like if there are people who come in our lives who have something negative to say about my husband, shut it down.
Yep.
People come into his life, try to boundaries. Say something negative, shut it down because that is the enemy.
Facts. And it happens. Well, and I think, again, it gets back to what the Bible says about casting down thoughts and imaginations. And this is what I meant when I was saying about unbiblical thoughts and definitions of what your marriage should be. If there's something trying to define your marriage that's unbiblical, you have to cast that down, bro. And I'm telling you, I think a lot of couples get in trouble when they allow the opinions of what they see with people who many times aren't happy themselves.
Yep.
Defining what you do in your marriage. And sometimes we wouldn't even have issues in our marriage, but you done heard something up over here. And it's like, well, where did all this come from? Like, exactly. When did this become an issue?
Yeah.
You know, and allowing circles and different things that people may talk to cause drama in your relationship that really wasn't even there.
Well, and we're here in Dallas now. I'm speaking at the EXO Marriage Conference tomorrow. And I think it's one of the areas that the enemy attacks over and over. Is emotional vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And so I won't give the whole sermon right now, but in 2 Chronicles 15, we find the prophet Samuel goes to Saul and he tells him, God said, utterly destroy the Amalekites. right? Like destroy everything, leave nothing, kill the man, the women, the children, the babies, the cattle, the sheep, kill it, like destroy it all. Well, Saul decides, no, I'm going to keep the good stuff, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to keep the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I was like, first of all, why would a loving God tell Saul yep. to mm-hmm. utterly destroy all these innocent people, right? Well, if you go back to Exodus chapter 17, what you find out is that there was a period of time where the Israelites were coming out of Egypt. They were tired. They were thirsty. They were hungry. They were complaining like, Moses, we need food. And it says that at that point where they were complaining, they even started to reminisce on Egypt. They were like, man, we had all yep. this back in Egypt. It was at that point that the Amalekites came and attacked them. And so fast forward, the reason why God told Saul to destroy the Amalekites is because they waited until Israel was vulnerable, hungry, thirsty, and reminiscing on their bondage to attack them. And the revelation God gave me about that, which is why I think it's so important in marriage, is you have to protect your marriage against Amalekites, which is anything and anyone that exploits your vulnerability. That person who, whenever you have an issue with your spouse, they're right there ready to talk yep. about it. Mm-hmm. That person who they're like not encouraging you to work it out, but they're like, man, I would leave her. Mm-hmm. That person who is like, let me make you feel better.
Yep.
Like you have to protect your marriage against that, because resentment creates a crevice that the enemy will walk through, and he'll bring every Amalekite through that door.
True.
And that's how he attacks us.
Man,
that's how he attacks us.
In the mind, bro.
Yeah.
What's your definition of a man? You know what I mean? Is it a biblical definition? Yeah. You know, so I just think all of those things play in there. You have to safeguard it. We find the enemy mm-hmm. playing with the tricks in the mind all the time.
All the time.
Absolutely powerful, man. Do y'all have anything coming up that my listeners and viewers can take part in and support?
Yeah.
What you got going on?
All right. So September 8th through the 11th this year, I am having my very first in-person retreat for current and aspiring women leaders. It's called Success from the Inside Out. We have an incredible roster of speakers. I'm talking about Dr. Anita Phillips, New York Times bestselling author, Bishop Vashti Murphy McKenzie, Michelle Williams, myself, others will be there. And for listeners of this podcast, there is a discount code for registration.
Good.
DFW100.
There
we'll take $100 off.
Yes.
If you get registered. Now, the registration fee will be increasing over time.
Yeah.
But if you go ahead and put that discount code in, you can get $100 off, and I would love to see you there.
Where's it going
to
be?
St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Vinoy Resort and Golf Club, right there on the water. Registration includes lodging. It includes most meals. All you have to do is show up. It's going to be an incredible experience.
And get poured into.
Yes. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. DFW 100.
So this is your first time doing this?
It's my first time. Yeah. You can go to nonajones.com/retreat to learn more. First time doing it, but it will not be my last. This is God.
Before we conclude, what made you decide to do this?
It was God. Like I've had people ask me all the time, when are you going to have a conference? When are you going to have a conference? I've never felt led to do it, but God gave me a vision for creating a space that would be restorative
yeah.
to women like me who you're working so hard, you're giving so much, and you just need a place where you can be poured into, you can relax, you can be inspired and equipped to go to the next level of purpose. So I'm literally creating what I've needed.
Yes. that's what this whole platform was. Mm-hmm. I created what I said. I wish I had people, you know, the body of Christ, we don't really share a lot of our scars.
Sure. Oh,
and so I said, man, I said, I'm out here. I said, when I was married, I kept wanting to, like, I'm struggling, mm-hmm. you know, being faithful in my marriage because I'm feeling like I'm being, you know, overlooked and all this type of stuff. I said, is there any other men out here? You hear about it after the fact, after the divorce or big scandal. I said, but I need somebody that I can be accountable to, that can be real with me and say, man, I understand, man. Me and my wife going through this. I went through this. This is how we overcame it.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was just on an island by myself trying to navigate this space. And so I said, God, in 2020, I'm going to create the Dear Future Wifey podcast. I'm going to be that which I desired to have in that season. So that's why I handpick amazing couples like you guys that will be transparent and vulnerable and help add a reference and healing and insight to other couples that may be navigating that same space and be like, let's watch this episode together. And and that's what's happened so many times is that couples have watched the episode and they say we were going through exactly what that couple went through and they gave us hope that we could overcome it.
Praise
and
God.
So thank y'all so much for being a beacon of light to people that may be in their dark season right now.
No,
that
thank
don't
you
even believe.
For creating the space for the light to shine.
Come on now.
You know what I mean? You could have taken all of your pain and frustration and just poured it into another relationship and been toxic. But instead,
could have been
like,
Kevin Samuels out here in these streets.
Listen. But that we are not.
So I said, and that's what would always be, that's a whole nother story. But I would always be praying against that. And that's why when you were talking about people creating platforms that create this other type of toxicity that people aspire to, and then you have this messed up generation of people that hate each other, men against women and women against men.
So
but then secretly you want to be married, but you can't even trust women. And women can't trust men. You got the red pill community against the pink pill community. And it's just all this toxicity. And my whole thing was saying, no, let's create a safe space because we need each other. And as the statistics show, married couples live longer, married couples earn more money together, you know, but we don't hear those great statistics about health and finance and bill and legacy and kids from two parent homes there, you know, just all that stuff. But we go to the negative and say, I can do bad all by myself and I don't need you and all this stuff. And so thank y'all for being a healthy couple and a very relatable couple and a couple that is transparent to say, no, it ain't been beautiful. It ain't been all perfect. It ain't all been this.
There's a lot of scars, bro. We could talk.
Hey, some of them are physical. Listen, there was a period in my life.
Jersey.
He came at me wrong one day and a pot went flying. All I know, this was early in the marriage, y'all.
Jersey, boy. She got it in her.
Take the girl out of Jersey, but can't take the Jersey out of the girl. Listen, y'all give it up for my family. Man, the Joneses. Thank y'all so much, man. Thank y'all for doing what y'all do and keep spreading this light.
Amen.
Y'all give it up for
them. My pleasure.
Stay tuned to the end for a letter to my future wifey.
Been writing these love letters to you.
I'm LaTerrace R. Whitfield. I've been nominated for 3 regional Emmys documenting my work with the homeless, as well as my personal adoption journey. Despite those accolades, the greatest award for me is truly providing the infrastructure for a transformed life. Visit KingdomRoyale.com for more details. Crown a king and make a donation today.
I just love it when couples are transparent and they're not afraid, especially people that are in leadership, people that are in ministry, to be very vulnerable and transparent about the ups and downs of marriage. So shout out to Tim and Nona Jones for sharing your journey with us. It really, really meant a lot to me. Here's my favorite part of the podcast where I speak to my future wifey. Dear future wifey, the thought of spending my life with you embarking on a journey filled with love, faith, and commitment fills my heart with joy. I want to take a moment to express my deepest feelings about what I envision our future together to be like. First and foremost, I want you to know that I am committed to falling in love with you over and over again, each and every day. Love is not just a feeling, it's a choice we make every day to cherish, honor, and respect one another. I promise to wake up every morning with a renewed determination to love you more deeply than the day before, to seek out the beauty in your soul, and to appreciate all that makes you uniquely you. I promise to be your rock in times of trouble, your comfort in times of sorrow, and your greatest supporter in times of triumph. Together, we will face life's challenges with courage and grace, knowing that we have each other to lean on and God's guidance to lead us forward. Your future hubby.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dear Future Wifey podcast. Remember, be lit, live intentionally and transparently, and don't stop loving.
Make sure to subscribe to our Dear Future Wifey YouTube channel. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We welcome your support. Simply share our podcast with your friends and family.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.